Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, September 23rd, 2014. This is our 244 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor, and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon, using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And this hour is sponsored by James from North Wales, Pennsylvania. Thank you very much, James, for your support. And hello, Michael.
Hi, Curtis.
Hello, welcome back. So we've been talking a little bit about problems of the Earth and how much help they can give us, and which could amount to quite a bit of help, just a little bit of guidance. But.
Yes, it's actually tremendous help. There's a reason that we have an advantage over much of the universe of other planets, because not every sentient being is gifted with the divine fractal. In other words, ahead of them does not necessarily mean that they have the divinity attainment ahead of them. They, perhaps in some of them, are pretty much at a level which will remain for quite a long time. And this is the concept of a new heaven, a new earth coming out of this planet, because there are many others that are other areas in the universe that are governed by divinity, by the divinity fractal. In other words, they have what would be considered from Holy Scripture as laws written in the divine laws written in their hearts. It's active. It is not a passive law that needs interpretation. It is a living ordinance of truth that brings forth not, you know, punishment or death or that type of negative, but exactly the opposite, where you have, instead of punishment, death, whatever, for failure to follow ordinance, it is prosperity, life, and success. So these living and divine guiding factors that we have installed in us get more and more attuned and more keen, and we begin to gain more successful attunement in our life as we live our lives with that in mind, with, you know, bouncing off of our thought adjuster, many of the things that have to do with personal will and choice, and we can choose to follow or not. There is not going to be a command, you absolutely have to do it this way. But there will be sometimes situations that help lead you toward, what might say, a better future, a better success. And these are many times orchestrated by the celestials themselves, who, depending upon your proximity toward divinity, in your attainment of psychic circles, will have personal responsibility for your destiny. And these guardians of destiny many times get involved with your life for good of your life, and sometimes it can be for an attitude adjustment. And I think when it comes right down to it, when we look at the planets right now and its trouble between the religions of the world, and let's say the base religions that have the basic source, the Abrahamic source of, you know, being Middle East, or these are the faith of Judaism and Christianity and Islam, and their confusions, even within each one of their own orders, are somewhat confused. And when you see that much of that can be disposed of if there is a living and dynamic, continuous association with the same source of truth, then there won't be this contention. And this is one of the problems that our planet has with tradition, with culture, with those things that, you know, cause division. But a lot of them have to do with old hatreds. They can bring about some real confusing situations that some people look toward. One of the things is that some people look toward celestial intervention as the answer. It's not the answer. The answer was vested in me as a vessel of one that will try to explain the celestial intervention is already installed in every individual, but it was sort of like hidden. And it's almost like it wants the powers that be, as, and they could be religious powers as well as civil powers, you know, political powers, try to keep it hidden from us, that we really have divine laws. Actually, you know, when it comes down to civil laws would not really work if it wasn't already written, that you just don't go about robbing people, doing things bad, right? You know, just beat up on somebody, you know, time I want, take all their money or whatever. And this kinds of attitudes are, and, you know, some people get disassociated from that. And then says, well, I'm never really doing that. But inside of them, there's this voice that's screaming out at them, don't do that, don't do that, because you're really going to be taking away a lot of good from people's lives. Mm-hmm. Some people haven't seen past finance yet. We've going on this island of Maui. Maui County is going through having this chance to ban all GMOs, all genetically modified organisms. And these have to do with the development of frankenfoods, foods that are not truly vegetables. They got bug stuff, animal stuff in thrown into it. Initially, the island, the county of Maui, developed a lot of genetically modified corn for seed corn, which was Roundup ready and was acclimated crops that would grow in different climates around the world. And it sort of did its job at that point, in a sense that it really was a natural weed that actually couldn't be killed by Roundup. That thing was inserted, that genetic code was inserted into the corn, so it could, you know, kind of like get sprayed by Roundup and not die. But later they began to put in other things and create insecticides and things like that were built into the crop genetically. So we have a chance here to try to stop it. And then there's this fury of money that's coming in to say, don't ban it, because if you do ban it, you're going to put these mega farms, these rich farms, out of business. And that means, you know, you're going to be putting out a lot of employees out on the street because of that. So you look at that dilemma and you say, where is the true decision? Well, in times where you are looking at decisions like this that need to be made, God, this is the time many times, oh God, what do I do now? Or what should I do? And that voice will ring clear. And it is because of that that you have guidance. These types of situations will bring forth proper guidance, guidance that will bring about good, not necessarily immediately, but truthfully in the long run, setting a standard that is an example to the world, to the rest of these large corporations that gotta realize that they've overstepped their power. Even our education institutions, higher education, have done tremendous experiments in modifying various crops for what may seem like a good purpose, but actually it really isn't. Right now, those that are in terms of growing crops organically are successfully done it without a lot of pesticides and all of that, which they claim would have to be added back into the farming, and it would put more chemicals back. But actually, it's successfully been shown by these organic farmers that there is a true way of growing things naturally. So this battle is going on right now. And it's based all, again, the biggest thing is not what GMOs really are, but the short range problem of money and jobs. And those are the leverage tools that the big corporations, who would just fire their employees anytime if they didn't need them, they'd get rid of them. Because they're just an overhead. Now they're saying, oh, no, you're going to put those guys out of that's not the right way to think. Because we know these corporations have no heart. So what do you do? Well, in situations like this, this is where the divine voice can ring true. So this is really where, you know, when we look for rescue, Christians, they look for rescue, for rapture. They look for a new world leader, one that will change the face of the planet. Well, the true consciousness is, again, already installed, and people just gotta get attuned. It's not the easiest, loudest shouting voice there is, but it's a voice that brings about a peaceful resonance within a person. And there is that. Because if there is that internal peace, that means the adjuster has made his point clear. If it is in turmoil, then this adjuster is trying to turn your attitude. So
with the turmoil, would you also be referring to the turmoil of the earth? I mean,
yes.
They're bombing Syria now.
Right.
More civilians will be killed.
Right.
It's poor people.
And it is something that the civilians themselves have within themselves to put a stop to this. So they are at a point of choice too. Are they truly to believe that what is being proposed before them is the right way and that they should die for this cause? Because absolutely, people have faced death with a valiant and heroic attitude if it is important. And that is not to be seen as something that is to be taken away from a person, if that is some part of their destiny in attaining a certain commitment of toward truth. But if they're like, you know, just going to be bombed out helplessly, have no choices and no, out of nowhere. But this is This is where it has been made clear that you are messing with a big, I guess you might call it a beast, who can make war with it. And this is what these terrorists are trying to commit themselves to. It's been something that has happened before, and at more simplistic levels, but the very same action has been done. And the powers that be always try to use that statement of, you know, we got bigger and more powerful guns, and this is pretty much the way it's moving again. And are we going to stop? What other alternative do we have? It's one of the problems of the confusion right now. If the voice was made clear that it is that same voice that speaks, the same voice that speaks to all men, then something like what you might say is the innocents die, you know, war and turmoil and hardship, it happens. And when it comes down to trying to avoid it absolutely, may mean that there is no lesson learned. And right now, the lesson that is being learned on a very high level, at a level where the United Nations are now, you know, functioning, operating. I mean, leaders of nations. It is the, right now, session is, in the United Nations is so crowded. It's like, okay, you're going to start it from the top down. Well, has it already happened from the bottom up? Well, these are the innocents that are suffering. How much of a voice do they have? Well, maybe they do have a voice. Maybe that innocence is really bringing about the fact that the United Nations is saying, hey, we've got to really do something about this. And then there are more leadership right now in these meetings than ever before. And even, you know, talking about a kind of broken down United Nations building that got a little bit renovated. But really, when it comes right down to it, it is a crowded floor. And I think this is where every voice there has an opinion. And many times we simply have to hope and pray that leaders are attuned to that, their own personal divinity fractal, their thought adjusted, and that those of the planetary destiny who have telepathic transmission capability into these areas, able to help smooth over and do right when about guiding the our own, you know, consciousness, perhaps starting from the United Nations, starting at that level of leadership, where right now it's already, you know, functioning at a much lower level of, and sometimes at a low, that low level is total confusion. I mean, getting bombs thrown at you and gas, you know, killing people. I mean, that's just like, it's not right. Because the purpose is totally confused. And I guess made unclear.
Well, all this bombing is destroying their community, destroying their homes and livelihood and the stores and their whole infrastructure. People have to flee. With what?
Nothing.
Nothing. It's just horrible.
And you know, that's the problem. And it's already been prophesied that you know, would happen, and it's happening in this time. So right now we're looking at several situations that are building looking only at the pain, but looking at the prevention of such pain, maybe starts at much higher level. And an agreement, this is not a good thing to allow to continue. And how do you uproot it without getting all this? You know, you've got to go in there and find ways to remove this. A lot of them are united philosophically. And those that have joined this, perhaps the side that is like trying to be rubbed out, you might, the ISIS, the Islamic State, and the Levant, they are together because they feel they have a, perhaps even divine mission. And this confusion is something that is embedded into a person wanting to have a purposeful life. And it may take that form of actually becoming this type of organization to try to change the face of the planet, because the global capitalism, and as what I was saying, is a reliance upon that is not necessarily the answer. Trying to find ways to change it can take, you know, a simple vote, like I'm talking about GMOs, and this is the representative of capitalist system, profit-based system that has affected the health and well-being of people who just innocently go and eat corn chips and get terrible stomach problems, and because it's the genetically modified organism, you know, that is able to distort the very health-giving bacteria in one's own stomach, you know, and cause it to become like terrible. The factors involve, you know, more overt ways like war and trying to stop that. But we want to get back and give people that choice that is not so violent. And that's where the United Nations perhaps is coming into the picture right now.
Well, Ted wrote back on the 11th of September, he says, Curtis, Michael, and Shaharon, thank you for the excellent podcast, and thanks for the extended discussion of holographic governance. The word hologram makes sense when we envision each free will individual pinging the adjuster / Jesus as situations arise. Superb explanation and guidance. I understand this now. It is actually what we might call continuous streaming prayer, in which communication guides discussion toward the more and perfect response. In any event, where a value judgment or action is called for, set the ping to check on automatic. I've tried it a couple of times. The individual's goal seems to be making it automatic, such as when one practices karate until designed response becomes a reflex. The divine goal is to help us be perfect, even as I am perfect. Very good. God bless, and thanks again. Signed, Ted from Pennsylvania.
Well, thank you, Ted. That's a very good summary. And it can become even simpler and lighter. I was just talking about how at a position like the United Nations, you hope that their divinity voice, thought adjuster, is working feverishly under guidance toward a solution that could really change the face of our planet towards peace. In other words, we begin to beat our swords into plowshares and our spears into pruning hooks, and men now shall not learn any more how to make war anymore. And war is an obsolete way of settling disputes. Votes may be, but there are other factors involved there in settling disputes. But disputes will come about, and it is the wonderful gift that we have within us. If we do not acknowledge that, then there is confusion. So I was just about to say there on the light side of it, you know, from early realization that I had this divine voice, often testing it in very simple situations, such as finding a parking space in a crowded parking lot, turn down this row, go down that side, but it's full. You have this discussion with your adjuster, but it's full. But your adjuster can see forward, and you can't. But you say, okay, I'll have you lead me then. I'll go down that row, and I don't see a parking stall. It's not there. You go down this so you can make that left turn, and from that left turn, you'll make another left turn, which is going to take you right to that. But there's no space, and you're arguing. You have this little discussion with your adjuster, your divine friend, and he is guiding you and trying to show you his reality. And then just when you do that, exactly where he told you it was going to be, the car pulls out. And that leaves you a space within 10 feet of the door of where you wanted to go. And you go, my goodness. Well, if you can do that again, so you do that over and over. Well, for my life, and it's now one of the things that I played games with my wife early in terms of saying that, look, okay, I'll go find out, and I'm going to have my parking attendant tell me where it is. It's all that just the divinity fragment I call my parking attendant. And he, well, where does it say to go? I says, okay, all right. And we find it every time. There has not been one occasion that we didn't find one, except when it was told to us specifically, don't go over, you know, don't go over there because you're just not going to find anything right now. And I go, okay, well, I guess I'll go over here. And sure enough, you know, it turns out that way, nothing moves within a reasonable amount of time. Maybe, you know, be circling that area for 30 minutes and not find anything. So anyway, this is one of the ways of exercising that guidance. And he's doing that. The divinity fragment is actually doing that for our benefit, to realize that our divine voice is real. Even if it comes down to something as trivial and playing a game as finding a parking spot, then it comes down to other things like, where the fish biting? Well, you have to go there. Oh, it's like Christ said, cast your net on the other side. Well, who is telling me to go? We did that all day long and, you know, nothing happened. He says, okay, go back out and cast your net on that side. Go that way. Okay. You know, but it really works. It really happens. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, let's try this again. You know, and then other things happen. Yeah, pretty soon, you find that people who have done well for you, or, you know, their lives get better. And they come to me and they say, I'm their lucky charm. And this is after, you know, I did some work for you and, you know, I got a lot of business. I say, well, yeah, good. Because you did it honestly. You didn't try to milk me for every dime I had. I'll pay an honest price for an honest work. And, well, anyway, all of this is a little bit of how that dimension is beyond our organic limitations, our physical limitations as organic beings, you know, mortal individuals. We have a dimension that we can play into and participate with guidance. And we have a friend in that. And every one of us who really seeks righteousness and right and wrong, and have live an honorable life, we'll find that we can exercise it. Not always on the highest levels. We can, as I said, I bring it down to a little game, you know. We could use that many times. And then winning a game in a sport is very different. Yet I've seen many who have tried to win by cheating and really end up cheating themselves because it's obvious. And those that you do it many times have acknowledge that it's beyond them already, and they just ask for that little bit of extra. And I cannot believe it's within microseconds that an impossible maneuver of thought. You could not have thought about such a maneuver being able to be done, and yet they are able to do it. Then you go over there and you ask, well, how did you know that you should have done that? And he says, do what? That move you did right there, it was so perfectly done and at time then, so I don't remember it. It just happened, you know. And yet you know that these guys are very attuned to that. And it's that little bit beyond. It's almost like the physical spiritual connection bypasses the limitation of logic in the mind. So these are the extra dimensions that we are meant to live into. Because that part of our maturity beyond, like I say, the organic, the mortal being. So, thanks, Ted, for that comment. It's a nice summary.
Okay. So, Wendy from New Zealand, 15 September, she writes, "Deeply loved and treasured gents, I wish to share a vision dream revealed to me. I share only the images of most importance impressed upon my memory, those whom I have come to know in this blessed platform were gathered in a room along with the Shaharon, known to us as Ted. We were permitted to freely discuss any topic and ask any question. My question was very simple. Has Christ Michael of Nebanon given permission for the redeemed to be gathered upon him?
The Shaharon,
unto him. Excuse me. The Shaharon didn't give an answer immediately. Instead, we all gathered around a gemstone artisan. The gemstone artisan was meticulously polished and crafting. The most beautiful ruby gemstone into a spectacular floor tile. I realized the tile had to be crafted to perfection before it could effortlessly fit into this unique place. With great joy, the Shaharon then blessed us with a protective covering, which they spoke of some weeks ago, referring to the 144,000 sealed servants, and told us to rejoice. He left us with a simple verse, Rev 14:3. And they sang a renewed song before the throne, and before the four living creatures and the elders, and no one was able to learn that song except the 144,000 who were redeemed from the earth. I am sure the Shaharon would expand on any further understanding of this vision, if they so desire." And she ends with love and warm greetings from New Zealand, signed Wendy. Thank you, Wendy. That was nice. That sounds like a very interesting dream. Something to wake up and go wow with.
Actually, yeah, that's this kind of dream is a very special one, because it is one in which you are not locked. Like I was talking about organic limitations, our body, our physical limitations. We grow past that. in order to realize that our consciousness is past that. So when a person goes to such a lively, you might say, lively, living dream, you are really there. You are receiving much of that information on purpose. It's not something your mind is trying to make up because it has to clear the clutter of the day. Many times that's what happens in dreams. You know, you review the clutter of the day or some idea that you got to do another task. So your mind is working that out. Your brain is actually working it out. But this is, in this case, it's not. You're actually being taken over there and really are living it with the Sharuns. And your Taraktik Sharun is real. And he also refers you to that scripture because it is one of the ones in which is given the singing of the new song. I've referred to that before. And Sharuns, again, are the destiny guardians of Rancha. And they are involved right now, and much of the time, in influencing the leaders of the planet in terms of making a point. And that point is to guide them toward truth in decisions. So the United Nations and those behind the scenes are actually being focused on by the individuals as the Sharuns. I would like to express again my experience with them in their, you might say, their temple or position of prayer. Again, they were seated, and there were only enough seats only for them, and their singing of a song was very simple. It is a song that I would hope to be able to achieve, although I can mimic it, but it is not a song that is filled with words. It's filled with tones and vibrations that, when uttered, bring about this beautiful light. And it's light that was, you know, just, it's like incense, like the smoke of incense that was flowing out of them, and purple light, as they sang the song, and their song was tones, and it was like, and then this room kept getting more and more beautiful with their purple light, blue, purplish light. And that is a new song. What it amounts to is a form of worship, but one which connects to the source of life, living water, living and alive. And they are the ones that when they are charged up with this vortex of living energy, are able to express it out in that form. But they are the most powerful to influence and to help give forth dreams, give forth telepathic communication. And it is they who help in the sight of even the ancients of days, and definitely in front of the Veranda Deck Most Highs, help to influence our planet toward peace and toward love, truth. And it's right now is a critical point that is happening right now, and it is all part of this cycle, which is again pointed out even celestially in the alignments of the blood moon cycles. And there's this alignment that is falling on Jewish holy days, just are pointing out that there are special things that have been prepared for and are in store for the turning of our planet's consciousness away from, you might say, being lost to being one in which is found, finding or found. And because of that, you'll really realize that the name of truth is already built into every human being. And it's just got to come about, which is a term which is almost the same as repent. Come about and turn toward and listen to. I gave some lighthearted, real life games that I've worked with, but they're deeper ones that are very important in situations that are, and they come about. We do have reactions that are base and maybe instinctive and animalistic, but the term is that are given many times are ones that are quietly suggested by that divine voice. And only when you're ready to listen will it speak. So in this matter of fitting a beautiful gemstone, it's like, yeah, you've got some rough edges that the entire planet has to be fit into, you might say, the entire galactic picture of becoming a full-fledged sovereign planet, accepted into the structure of the divinity you might say, the universe, a new fitly joined and framed building and habitation of divinity. And interesting you use the term. You were given to see ruby. What color is ruby, Kurt?
Red.
Yeah. And red is like, really, it represents our life blood, you might say. And when our lives are properly alive, fitted into the framework, then it was just slipping. We're almost at that point, you might say. Almost at that point. Yeah. Have you ever tried a cut and try method? Recently at the dry dock where a boat was coming in, it had a wooden hull. Mm-hmm. And there were spots in the hull, many spots in the hull, which were the wood had rotted because of it being in the water too long without being taken out and, you know, cared for. And I said, how do you repair that? You take the whole board out? What we do is we try to avoid that if we can, and we just simply take a chisel and cut out all the rotted material and try to see if we can get down to the good wood. And then we kind of cut a piece that kind of estimate the size of that piece to put in that place that we cut a hole, space out that can be, you know, we measure and fit. You know, and it's, sometimes they get it right the first time, and sometimes they got to go back and, oops, I got to cut another piece because this one didn't fit. Or, you know, so trim it a little bit here, or that, yeah, I got to trim a little bit there, and cut and try. And then it finally fits. But in this case, and what apparently you can see was, you know, when you look at the precision work that is done by a gemstone, and you're looking at, you know, tiny, tiny bits of a measurement that are, oh my goodness, so tiny. It's like sharpening the edge of a sword. It's to make, you ever, the difference between a sharp edge and a dull edge is such a small amount. You know?
And yes, it is.
That's the precision work they might be talking about and kind of hinting at. It's getting close, but it's very, very tight right now. We want a perfect fit, you know. So this last little bit. And when I talked about having my attitude adjustment, because I openly admit right now, at one point in my Christian ministry and career as a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, there was a point of me having a certain kind of Christian or religious bigotry, which my guardian allowed for a attitude adjustment, which is like grinding away. And that attitude adjustment was far from being painless. Anyway, it did, and my attitude did get adjusted, however, in order that I'd be able to speak these kinds of words and with the level of truth, in other words, with the kind of association I have with the divinity fragment within me, fractal God, that fractal representing an ever more real personality, one in which is active and alive, and gives this reflection much of what I speak right now. So could very well be that this fine-tuning that's happening right now, and this situation that is brewing up with the Middle East in terms of even Israel shot down a plane. You know, they've actually gone to the point where they shot down Syrian plane. So there's real war that's happening. Is it World War III? I think so. And this is something that is very different from, you know, the kind of war that we think about. Was it Einstein that said, I really don't know what World War III would be like, but World War IV, I can describe it to you. It would be one in which we'll fight with sticks and stones.
Oh. Oh, yeah. I can envision him saying that. I don't recall that, though.
Yeah, I think that's he said that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's splitting the atom got us into a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Well, we're not the only planet that split, that ended up with that kind of technology of blowing each other up. We know from Tan's own testimony that there's some planets not here because they really did it. They really did it. They blew themselves away. And there was required a lift, and that lift, that rescue mission, amounted to Tan and Nella as one of their citizens that were rescued. So Biave is not the home planet. It was one before that.
Is Mars one of those planets that have self-destructed and just left their buildings and ruins behind?
I wouldn't mind asking that question to Sharun, but it's almost, you know, like it's self-explanatory if we just look at it.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, it was, to tell you the truth, somewhat dissolved. There are some celestial forces that came into play that basically fried that planet. It's a long time. And there's theories, yeah. You've heard of theories that our population on Earth is really from Mars or initially. We're really the Martians. But I don't know if that's true at all. But I wouldn't mind. All I know is what I remember asking to go to visit Mars. Not land on Mars, but just go to visit it, look at it. And we orbit. We really didn't orbit. We didn't even orbit. We just stopped there and let me view out and view Mars and from space. And is this good enough for you? And so and then their comment was, Mars is dead. Mm-hmm. Is dead now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In comparison to Earth, obviously, it looks dead, you know.
Our planet has lots of life here.
Yeah, it's really something that you don't want to destroy.
So, have other civilizations come and gone here? You know, I know of like the Egyptians or the Mayans are not here anymore. I think the new Egyptians aren't the old Egyptians.
Yeah, well, the old Egyptians are not here. Well, when you look at the Middle East, let's say, in terms of the ancient empires and civilizations, this pretty much started all of a sudden. But there were and are evidences of outposts, and they're all over the world. And one of the key characteristics of these outposts, which are not Earth civilizations, but more, you know, I guess you might say, outposts. They were, for one reason or another, placed in strategic areas on planet. Now, one of the characteristics of them was huge megalithic foundational structures. And I got a picture of me standing by one, which is, I found immense. And it is, I believe, in Osaka's castle's base. See, the base of Osaka Castle in Japan doesn't look like it belongs with the rest of the castle. It looks so much older. And some of the stones on the base are perhaps a block, maybe that's not block long, but let's see, how long was it? Almost 80 feet long, about maybe 20 feet high, one chunk of stone. And it was moved into place because it's on top of smaller stones. And wow. They say, well, this is not made by the Japanese. It was here. They built their castle on top of it, you know. And when you look at the structure, it has a kind of like a flat place, and then they built the castle on top of that. Oh, I wonder what this flat place is all about. Well, I wonder what they'd be needing a flat, solid foundation for. Something big, something powerful.
Yeah, we can't move stones like that.
No. I don't know how they would have done it, because it's just too huge. You know?
Amazing.
Even pouring one, if you were to pour that, even the pours for the Hoover Dam weren't that big, concrete pours, because they couldn't make them that big because the heat generated would have cracked the concrete, right?
Yes, they had a big program to cool off that concrete as it was being poured.
Right, they had pipes running through there.
Cool
water and stuff.
What an amazing and they could only, job.
Yeah, when I looked at their pour, and I said, oh, that stone was even bigger than that. So it wasn't poured into place. You know, it's a real chunk of stone that was cut out somewhere and put there. And put in a kind of a obvious place. And I don't think it needed to be there. It was almost like, and you guys walk up this ramp, and it's a huge, you really walk up the castle on a ramp. It's not steps. You really get up there, and you walk up what would appear to be have been ramps. At the turn of the ramp is where this huge stone is. It's like, oh my goodness, look at the size of this thing. But people don't, you know, to pay attention, because they're going to go up to the top of the castle. So, oh, wow, they're pretty good. Maybe they just, you know, decided that this is naturally there in this car. But when you look at it, it's on top of something else.
Oh, that stone was on top of another stone?
Yeah, smaller stones.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, so it isn't like they built the palace or castle on top of in that location because of this massive stone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. That's immediately what you got with the assuming, you know. Wow, it's kind of neat. You build it on top of a quarry. A remainder of the stone there. Because, so, well, why not? You know, just build on top of it. But it's not the case. There's a lot of, you know, things about that in all these cultures that are old that kind of hint at celestial, the gods, you know, the celestials that influenced civilization. But they brought in their encampments, which were essentially that, camps.
Well, there are so many things on this planet that we couldn't have built that are here.
Yeah, exactly.
That are here, and it shows that, I mean, why look for life on other planets? We know it's there because they've been here.
Yeah.
Unless they're still here.
They're here. Some of them are here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the interesting ones was the girl that kind of, she's a pretty and young girl that gave me the rocking horse before I left. Yeah. And she was one of the human-looking people. I mean, she's so human-looking, she'd probably never be thought of as anybody else other than another person, right? Talked really good English, and, you know, she could have had no problem walking around here. Except if somebody asked her for a license, and she had to have a fake ID, maybe, because I know she wasn't from Earth. But you know, we got human beings outside of the planet, besides, you know, other kinds of people. So they're walking around and being still here.
Yeah, well, that Arthur Brisbane, when he was interviewing Tesla in 1894, he said his head was in the shape of a fan. A fan with a big forehead.
Uh-huh.
And his chin came to a point, and he called it an ice pick.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that certainly looks like an alien head. I mean,
yeah.
To call it an ice pick, I mean, very strange. And but there probably are a lot of people from other planets living here on this planet, just living as us, maybe as guides for us or reporters for them.
Yeah, well, yeah, they have so many jobs to do, but right now I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes because it's really a critical time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't pay any attention to the man behind the curtain. That famous video or movie from 1939.
Oh, yeah. What was it called?
The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah, The Wizard of Oz, yeah. You had to go see The Wizard of Oz.
Had to go see The Wizard.
Yeah. And she wasn't in Kansas anymore.
Yeah. No, this is another place. But it was all it was all like a dream.
Mm-hmm. She had her companion with her, Toto
her dog.
Yeah. And my daughter has a dog looks just like that. Just like Toto.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But aren't dreams really magical? Here, Wendy was talking about her dream, and it sounded as though her first couple lines, she was only going to talk about the important parts of her memory. Mm-hmm. But I don't always remember my dreams. They're usually gone by the time I'm just waking up.
Right, because your brain is clearing out. Doing some, what you might call it, housekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway, how are we doing? I gotta go pretty soon. So.
We can say aloha and talk some more next week.
Okay. Aloha.
All right. Aloha, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.